Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we spend the next 90 minutes or so talking with you about animal behavior, maybe your pet's behavior, with Dr. Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, dog trainer, and author of many books. And the latest, I believe, is Love Has No Age Limit, and Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your Home, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
And I tell you what, it's a wonderful book.
Oh,
great to have you back.
You know, we're Karen Lennon and co-author, and I are very excited. It's nominated for a Dog Writers of America Award. Yep. So I'll be in New York City a couple of weeks from now at one of those banquets. Just imagine me not on the red carpet. I don't even own a pair of high heels. I don't know what to wear to a big award banquet in New York City.
Well, I don't know that you would want to take your cues from, was it the Grammy Awards the other night?
Yeah, no, I don't think
those,
so.
Those plunging back lines.
Oh, no plunging. There will be no plunging. There will, you know, my designer labels have letters like L.L. Bean and R.E.I. Those are my designer letters.
Well, congratulations, though. That's got to be a nice, that has got to be a thrill.
Yeah, it's nice to be nominated, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
It's fun to go to the Big Apple.
Well, there's a lot of exciting developments in animal-assisted therapy that's going on. I think it would be fun to talk a little bit. What kinds of animals are used in this, and how do they enrich the lives of the people?
That animal-assisted therapy and animal-assisted activities, This is a wonderful new job for dogs and cats and some rabbits. But, you know, it's fascinating. If you think about all the roles that our companion animals have played through time, there's a new one. And it's basically recognizing the clearly measurable positive effects that in some contexts companion animals can have on people's health. And so there are over 30,000 registered teams registered through the Delta Society or Therapy Dogs International, who go through some training and are registered therapy teams who either present dogs for interaction and petting, which basically in ideal circumstances and very often has a profound effect in itself. It increases oxytocin, and oxytocin is the wonder drug.
Feel-good stuff.
It's feel-good, and it decreases, it's profoundly good for you. I mean, it changes your physiology. It decreases all kinds of stress physiologies. It increases your tolerance to pain. It increases time of healing from serious injury and surgeries. Thank you. Yeah, it makes it take longer to heal. No, it's wonderful, wonderful stuff. So just even petting a dog, for example, can be really helpful. And but also, animals are being used in very specific medical therapy, physical therapy, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's a very exciting field to be in right now. I just did a seminar in Naples, Florida, that's will be out as a DVD in a month or so, about how do you know if you want to get involved, what kind of dog, I focus mostly on dogs because they're most common, what kind of dog is best for it, what do you need to learn, common mistakes and problems and troubleshooting and resources. And so it's very exciting. And I personally am excited because I have a new dog, as you know, Larry, a little rescue from a Amish puppy mill named Tootsie, who is a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. And she could, not all dogs are suitable to be therapy dogs. Yeah. It's actually pretty hard work, but she actually might be
She might be a natural.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Well, you should be. You know, and Artie in Sun Prairie has a comment or question relating to animal-assisted therapy, I think. Let's go there. Hi, Artie.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that I belong to a group in Madison, based in Madison. We cover all of southern Wisconsin. I think maybe Patricia McConnell is aware of us, called Dogs on Call. And right now, we have 105 animal handler teams, mostly dogs, but we do have a few cats and a few mini horses. And we visit hospitals and nursing homes. We do a lot of children's programs. We just started something new a couple years ago. We bring dogs into the dorms during final weeks for the University of Wisconsin students. And I just wanted to mention, like I said, we have 105 animal teams now, and we don't have near enough for all the facilities that want us. So it's something that is booming, and we could use more help.
Oh, I'm so glad you called. You know, that kind of program, it's so valuable. I've talked to students, by the way, and bringing dogs in for oxytocin rushes during finals week. This is really a good idea.
Students love it. We started out by going just to the Helen White Library, where there's the three floors where the children study. And it was so popular. We've been doing that for 3 years now. And then we started taking them right into the dorms. And, like, during last finals in December, we were at a dorm every night of the week.
I love it. And, you know, there's also, I'm sure you're aware, Artie, there's also a program here in Madison through the UW Vet School called Pet Pals that takes teams to the children's hospital and does some just really amazing work. So, yeah, if people are interested, check out Dogs on Call. I'm so glad you mentioned that. Pet Pals is another possibility.
Mm-hmm. And there are probably others around the state. I bet Milwaukee.
Sure,
I bet Milwaukee's got one.
I'm sure there are.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call very much, Artie. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Someone asked the other day about dogs and sniffing, and I wanted to just talk about that. Dogs often sniff around to get familiar with maybe with a new location or maybe a new animal or maybe a new human. But what is the world of smell really like for dogs? Why can they figure out from smell and what can they figure out from smell?
Oh, this is, how long do we have? Because this is, you know, the world according to dogs is, as everybody knows, filtered through their nose. But what we don't think about the implications of that very often because we don't tend to think about scent. It's the sensory experience that we have the least language for. For example, what is the common name for someone who can't smell?
I don't know.
Right? There's blind, there's deaf, and there's We don't have much language about it. But once you start looking into the world of scent, and I just did a different seminar in Orlando on communication in dogs and spent about a quarter of the time talking about scent. And it's so fun, Larry, to think about. Here's one little example. You know how if you look at, say, oh, I don't know, like we're thinking visual now, okay? So you look at a beef stew, and you can separate out, well, there's the chunk of the beef, and there's the carrot, and there's the onion. And then if you have a really good palate, then you can taste the sauce and go, someone put some thyme in there, maybe a little red wine, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
But you can separate it out sort of in chunks. That's how dogs can do smell. So they can smell something to us that smells, sort of lilac-ish or peppermint-like. And they can separate it out into individual components as clearly as you can separate out the carrots from the beef.
Okay.
And so that's just, you know, sort of one little tiny difference. There's a great book called Scent of the Missing. That's a book about a search and rescue dog puzzle written by Susanna Charlson about her learning to be a team member in search and rescue, which involves teaching your dog to use his or her nose to solve a problem.
Actually, I interviewed her.
Yeah. And it's a great book.
Oh, it's a great book.
Wonderful book. Yeah, I got a preview of it and got her here to Madison, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. Got her to do a signing in the Borders, by Borders. Anyway, so if people are interested more, they might want to look at that book. We actually have it on our website, but they can get it on Amazon. So there's just a whole world of scent that we don't think about very much. But if you really want to understand your dog, then you might want to look into it because there's a lot to think about.
Let's turn to Julie in Mazamani. Hi, Julie. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. How are you? Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
Great. What's on your mind today?
Well, we have a dog that we adopted from a rescue, and he has a behavior that just has us not knowing whether or not he's going to make a good pet or whether we got a real problem.
Okay.
This dog is a Shih Tzu mix, and he is what we call a talker. You know, he'll growl and he'll grumble a lot of times just for no apparent reason. His tail is wagging. You know, he seems happy, but he'll be doing this growling. But then sometimes, all of a sudden, for no reason, the growl gets angry and he bites. Or if I'm walking out the door and he comes running over, tail wagging, oh, mama's going someplace, and I say, hey, little buddy, I got to go, he'll attack my foot. It's a snarl and a bite. And, I mean, we love the little guy, and he gets along well with our other three dogs, but we're not sure if this is a behavior that we can fix or if we got a real problem.
What, you don't like being bitten?
No.
Not especially. I've done other things I enjoy far more.
No, you know, life is hard enough without being afraid you're going to be injured in your own home.
Or the neighbor comes over and gets bitten.
Or the
grandchild, yeah.
Yeah, and that actually was what I was going to ask you, because the preface to my next question to you is whether this is going to work for you depends on so many factors, but one of the factors is your family composition. If you had young children living with you right now, I would say, this is, you know,
not going to work.
Yeah, this is a very dangerous situation.
Yeah.
If you have grandchildren who come to visit and you can put the dog away,
then
it's completely different. So then the question to ask yourself is, how much do we want to work on this? Because can you get it turned around? Maybe. You know, it's always just a probability statement. No, if somebody guarantees you they can fix it, just run away.
Checkbook. You know, and the fact that he's 10 years old and has been brought in, from rescue, we don't have any way of knowing really what maybe caused the behavior or precipitated it. His previous foster moms did tell me, oh, yeah, he's a grumbler. One said, well, I always backed off when he grumbled, so I never got bit. And then I'm thinking, well, okay, then are we enabling this behavior?
Yeah. It's you really don't want to be bitten, but on the other hand, you don't want him to learn that the way I manage the world around me is by growling and then following it up with a bite.
I'm the alpha, not him.
The first thing I would do if I were you is I absolutely would, because you said you love this dog, take the time and spend the money to get a good behaviorist to come in. I would, if all possible, have them do a house call. That's a little bit more expensive, but it's always better to see a family and a dog in its natural environment, you know? If you can, you know, contact Dog's Best Friend or one of the companies here in Madison that has some really well-trained consultants who could help you. Because you can never really know how likely it is to turn a behavioral problem around until you do about an hour and a half. So it's possible. It's clearly something probably always going to have to be managed. One thing I would say is one of the first things I would do is I would get a really good health check with my veterinarian. You know, I'm about to go get in my annual physical. And, you know, frankly, most of them, whether they're from physicians or veterinarians, they look at blood pressure, they look at heart rate, they look at how your teeth look, you know, they look at your ears.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not going to tell you, maybe the dog's in pain. You know, he's 10 years old, maybe he has bladder stones, maybe he has arthritis. So that's something to look at. But I think you might be very wise to call in a behaviorist, because you're probably always going to have to manage it to some extent. Like the biting at your feet as you walk out the door, that's usually something you can turn around once you know how relatively easily.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know the extent of all the context. So that's what I do. I check in with an expert.
And so you spend a little bit of money right now, but then you really have, then you kind of know where you're at.
They're going to give you a good idea. What do you have to do to see if you can turn this around? What would that look like? You know, what would working on this look like? And, you know, what are your options? You can work on it. You can do what you're doing now, which obviously isn't working for you.
Right.
You could send him back. You know, how much money would it, how many sort of sessions would it take? So that's what I do is get, talk to somebody who does this for a living, who sees cases like this day after day after day, like I did for 23 years, and get a better idea of what you're really dealing with, because sometimes you really can turn these kind of things around.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Pam in Appleton, on to you now. Hi, Pam.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay. I'm calling about one of our cats. He's 8 years old, always been updated on his shots and that sort of thing. About 3 years ago, he contracted feline leukemia, even though he had been had a shot every year and that sort of thing. He, thanks to something miraculous called LTCI, he recovered. He was literally on death's door, and he had the treatment with LTCI, and now he's absolutely fine.
That's great.
Yeah, it was miraculous. His hematocrit was down to 8.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's, you'd never know he had been sick. However,
I was going to say, I know there's a but.
Yeah, there's a however here.
I know there's a however.
Okay, while he was really, really sick and we really didn't think he was going to make it, we pampered him quite a bit. And he couldn't make it to the litter box, which was just down the hall from our bedroom. And so he began, urinating in our sink, in the bathroom.
Well, that's easy to clean up.
Right, that's easy to clean up. But now, several years later,
I know what's coming. We know what's coming.
Yeah, we know what's coming. So about 4 months ago or so, now he started pooping on the floor.
Oh, on the floor. Okay.
In various places. It's a very hard stool. And so, you know, we wonder if maybe he needs more Femal. We took him to the vet because that's always, you know, your first guess.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, they did a workup on him. They took abdominal x-rays, and there's nothing. There's nothing wrong or unusual about him.
Well, there's nothing they found. And, you know, that's a very important distinction to make. I've been to the, you know, how many of us have been to a really great doctor, a really great physician, and said, my back hurts horribly, and they come back and say, the x-ray's great.
Yeah.
And you're like, but I'm not.
So
I want you to continue, but I just do want to put that parenthetical comment in there, is that just because nothing was found the first time doesn't mean that there's absolutely nothing wrong. So you did sort of the first pass of medical tests, and so now I'm guessing your veterinarian said, well, this is behavioral.
Well, right, yeah. Although, you know, every once in a while he will meow before he goes to the bathroom, as though perhaps it hurts.
Yeah. And you said it was hard stool. So did your vet talk to you about a stool softener?
Well, yes, to do more Femalt and make sure we, you know, get him to increase his water intake. He prefers, actually, he used to love canned food, but he prefers the dry now. They're on WD Dry. CD dry. So, you know, we try and get him to drink water. He actually does what I think is pretty good water drinking, but I'm just wondering if, could it be maybe his leg or something that hurts, you know, when he's like...
Yeah, no. See, you're on the same page I am. As a behaviorist, I see a lot of problems that really are not about cognition or learning. They often are about physiology or medicine. And so the fact that he meows right before, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, it's hard to pick up pain. You know, you go to a doctor and you say something hurts. It's really, you know, sometimes they can go like, oh, yes, your femur is broken. But a lot of other times they really can't. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is pain related. It's very, very common for animals, cats, to urinate or defecate outside of a box because they've learned it hurts them to go in the box. And so they get this superstitious behavior. Well, it's the box. One of the most common things, misunderstandings that animals learn is that it's about the location. So, for example, people who rent shock collars for dogs, which should, in my opinion, should never be rented. They're like scalpels. You can destroy a dog or possibly heal them with them, but they're very difficult to use correctly. The first thing that dogs learn when they get shocked is that that area is, it's not what they're doing that they think caused the shock. It's where they are. And cats learn the same thing. I went to the bathroom in the litter box and it hurt, therefore it's the box. And so then he goes somewhere else and like, oh, it's that place. And then so often you see animals who like go, quote, all over the house like you described because they're trying to find a place where it doesn't hurt to go. So I, you know, as a behaviorist, I hate to say it, but I want to turn you right back to a veterinarian. What you might want to do is talk to your veterinarian, look online about good holistic veterinarians. You know, sometimes, you might want to just broaden your search. But I think this is a physiological or a medical issue. And so if you came to me as a client, I probably wouldn't take your money. I would basically say, really want you to pursue something related to something physical and just broaden the brush a little bit. Look at holistic medicine and see if you can get it solved.
And good luck. Thank you very much, Pam, for calling. Appreciate it. Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, dog trainer extraordinaire, author, our guest here until 12:30. Our guest today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When you phone in with your question for Patricia today as we deal with animal behavior, Michelle Good will be our producer, production assistant, and she's answering the phone today and doing her normal good job. So great to have her along, and thank you again for listening in today. Patricia, we had another person who called, couldn't stay online, but wondered about what you said at the beginning of the show. You mentioned that you got a new dog from an Amish puppy mill, and the caller said, I always thought the Amish were kind people. Is it really an Amish puppy mill, or were you just kind of kidding?
Oh, dear. No, I wasn't kidding. But, you know, I probably should restate that. It was probably a puppy mill owned by some Amish people. So, you know, the Amish, it's a religion, it's a culture, and so is every single person in that group and culture a totally kind person?
A lot of kind people there, but not everybody.
Right. It's perfectly said. And so, regrettably, it is true that there are a number of people of the Amish persuasion who do have puppy mills. And it is a problem in Wisconsin. It's a problem in some other states. Some people believe it's an increasing problem. So, regrettably, it is just true that, like all groups, there are all kinds.
Yep.
Just like everybody else.
Yeah. So, you meant what you said.
I did. Yeah, I did.
Amy in Sparta, it's your turn. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. I have a seven-month-old Australian Shepherd, and this is a breed I'm not real familiar with, but I've had numerous dogs over the years, and he has a behavioral issue that I'm not familiar with how to break. He likes to play sheep. He loves to run around and bark at my heels, and he will nip the back of my knees and the back of my 10-year-old son's knees.
Eep.
And he doesn't do this with my daughter, who's 14, or my husband, just me and my son.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
And so it's a very annoying habit.
It's very annoying, and it's potentially very dangerous because this is a very young dog, and as the dog gets older, those nips are going to get harder and harder. And I don't want to hear about the teeth embedded in the back of your knee. It's not,
no.
It's not a good ending to the story. It is regrettably a very common problem that you see with herding dogs, shepherds, Aussies, cattle dogs, corgis, border collies. They were bred to manage the behavior of moving objects. So here's the fact that your shepherd only does it to two of you and not the other two is very meaningful.
Okay.
Basically, there are a couple ways to go about this. You know, you can discourage a behavior and you can also teach an appropriate behavior. And I always like to start with a positive first, teaching an appropriate behavior. So one thing I would do is focus on what you do want. You know, think about, well, what do you want your dog to do? So start teaching her to walk by your side as you're walking along. Just do really casual little sloppy little heels where you have a handful of little tiny treats in your hand and you lure your dog into position and then you walk along and give her a treat every other step as she's walking on your left side or walking on your right side. You choose. Make it one. It's a little easier. So teaching her what you do want her to do, you can also teach her to just sit and stay while you walk back and forth. That would be a great thing to do. So use positive reinforcement to show her what you do want. It's also, sometimes it's just true. I've certainly been through this with border collie puppies who, as seven-week-old puppies, throw themselves in front of your feet and hang onto your shoes. You basically also have to be like, yeah, we don't do that. You know, you just don't do that here. So I don't like to recommend any physical corrections, certainly not on the radio. I use them very, very, very rarely. So basically what I would do is have there be a consequence. As any time that happens, I would look at your dog. Often herding dogs extremely sensitive, and go, oh, what did you do? Oh, and you just look shocked. Now, this is your chance to be an actress. I mean, this is it. This is your Golden Globes Award. It's just look shocked. And then ask the dog to lie down and stay for a minute. So, like, if you do that, oh, you have to lie down and stay. Well, that's not very fun, is it? So I would try that. And you might want to also watch how your husband and your 14-year-old daughter interact with the dog and see what might be different about what you do and what your son does.
Hmm.
But nip
worth
this one in the bud, not the back of the knee.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, we got a funny Facebook cartoon from Carol Kelling. And essentially, it's like a dog, a couple of dogs that are like man and wife, and the wife is standing in the door. The dog wife is standing in the doorstep looking at the husband dog and saying something like, of course, the tape's so small. Planning on roaming the neighborhood with some of your buddies today, eh? And the dog is drinking lots and lots of water.
with a garden hose.
With a garden hose.
And looking a little larger and larger and larger.
But that's kind of brings up this whole business of marking, I guess.
It does. You know, and this is a really interesting question that we don't know many answers to. It's like, why do dogs do all this leg lifting and squatting and marking? Because it's not just to empty their bladder. We know. Why do some dogs? Everybody's seen this. One dog urinates, and then another dog waits and watches them. As soon as they're done, they go over and they overmark it. They urinate right on top. Well, very few people have looked at why they're doing that. You know, people have made assumptions, what kind of information they get from smelling the urine of other dogs. And it's fun. Actually, we here in Wisconsin have one of the world's now leading researchers in this topic, Annika Lisberg, Dr. Annika Lisberg, who's a professor at UW-Whitewater. She actually was a teaching assistant for my course at the university and was studying beetle taxonomy, and I sucked her into canine behavior. It's one of my finest accomplishments in life. And she ended up studying marking behavior in dogs, and she learned all kinds of interesting things, and she's continuing the research with her students at UW-Whitewater.
Very cool.
Yeah, so we don't know much, but we're starting to finally get some things figured out.
Well, and as long as we're talking about Facebook, and please, if you've got some photos you want to share with us or some questions that you want to pose, go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Sharon sent us a photo here of three dogs, three rescue hounds.
They're cuties, aren't they? Very cute. If you want an oxytocin hit of the day, then just go to the Facebook page.
Oh, man. And by the way, on the Facebook page, we have a link to your books and your blog. You should talk about your blog for a minute.
Yeah, it's really fun. There's like 18,000 people who read it all around the world. It's theotherendoftheleash.com.
Yeah.
All just one word, theotherendoftheleash.com. And it's an inquiry. It's an inquiry into our relationship with dogs, into canine behavior, and it's broad-ranging. So sometimes I'll talk about training. I talk a lot about my own dogs as sort of case studies and examples of how to handle issues. Because, you know, it's like doctors' children get sick, right? You know,
yeah.
It's like it's not like behaviorists don't ever have behavioral issues to work on. The issue is, what do you do about it? You know, how do you handle it? We talk about great books. We talk about scientific research. It has Larry. I have to tell you, it has some of the most intelligent commenters.
You're right about that.
There are some smart, smart people and wonderful, wonderful resources. So yeah, it's a really fun thing to do. I love doing
it. I'm one of those people they call a lurker. So I go on watch and don't participate much, but there are some really sharp people participating in that.
It's a really interesting inquiry and discussion, and we talk about, you know, sometimes we go off tact and talk about our favorite novel, you know, and I'll put a recipe on there. So yeah, it's really fun. And I too have a Facebook page. I'm starting to join the new world, Larry. Yeah. There are a lot of fans and it's really fun. I've enjoyed that one more than I thought I would. I was drug onto it, but it's sort of fun, isn't
it? It's fun.
Right?
Yeah, we have a great time with it. And Rusty and Marshall has a great question for you. So let's go there. Hi, Rusty.
Hi. Hello, Larry. Patricia. Do I ever need you?
Oh, dear. What's up?
Well, some time back, my sister-in-law moved in with us and set herself up in our basement.
I cannot help you with that.
No. But shortly thereafter, they went and rescued a dog. And he is I think they call him a blue heeler.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's right, but he's small and kind of like a fox. He's got a bushy tail and pert ears.
Sure. They were bred to work cattle. Yep. They're from Australia.
Oh, that's what they are. Huh?
Yeah.
And he's white with black markings. He's got a black ring around his tail and black ears.
Okay.
Anyway, he's a very pretty dog and cute, and I can see why she picked him up. However, I can also understand why he was there.
Oh, dear.
He has a problem with, specifically with anybody who's a stranger. And he also has a problem with me. If I go down into the basement, when my sister-in-law's down there, he attacks me.
Ooh, not good.
I mean, snarling and biting and all this stuff. I'm usually able to fend him off. If I go down in the basement and she's not in the house,
mm-hmm.
he comes down and wants to attack, but then he sees it's me. And he usually settles down.
Okay.
If we're upstairs, he loves me. He sits at my feet, you know, because I feed him and everything, too.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay.
He sits at my feet. He sits next to me and lets me pet him. He loves me.
Okay.
But if I go down there, he's a problem.
Got
now,
it.
I can deal with it, but the problem goes to when we have strange people in the house.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem to have a problem with women.
Mm-hmm.
He loves women.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
boys and men?
He'll come up, and if I have a friend of mine standing in the kitchen with me, he'll come up, and all of a sudden he'll see, strange man. You know, he's...
Yeah, okay. Right. And, you know, it's really common for dogs who are uncomfortable with unfamiliar people to be less comfortable with men. And it's not, a lot of people assume, they were abused by a man. And that's rarely the case, actually. You know, there are a lot of nice guys out there. It's more likely that dogs clearly know who's a male and who's a female. This is trivial to them, right? Talk about scent and their noses. Yeah. This is trivial. But dogs who are shy or uncomfortable around unfamiliar people are very often more afraid of men than women. And we don't know exactly why, but, you know, in this case, it doesn't matter. So there are a couple of things. It sounds like there are really two issues. One is discomfort with unfamiliar men, particularly. Two, what some people would call territorial aggression, in that it's obviously localized around this area. I actually like to call it protective aggression more often, because more often it's more like the basement's a bone. You know, I'm not protecting the basement from you. I'm protecting my access to it from you, because it's all mine. You can't have it and you can't have her when she's in it. So there are a couple of things. One, this is a great time to get a behaviorist. This would be a great you're in, where are you?
Marshall.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anybody close to you, but this would be a great time to get somebody come who and do a house call who is well-versed in counter conditioning and operant conditioning. I have a booklet called The Cautious Canine that might be very helpful for you. It's a very small booklet and talks about teaching dogs to associate unfamiliar men, in this case, with something good. So for you and the downstairs, I can quickly say what I would do about that, since he loves you upstairs, is I would teach him is that when you come downstairs, something really even better, more wonderful is going to happen. So you go partway down the stairs, and you have, like, the best food in your hand. You don't have kibble, okay? You got, like, little pieces of hamburger or steak or chicken or something. Or
really, I've got bacon.
You got bacon. Bacon, bacon, bacon. Don't you love that ad? Bacon, bacon, bacon. Yeah. I'd open it myself, but I don't have thumbs.
Well, that would do for me.
Yes.
And I can handle that.
Yes.
But he'll be outside with me, or for instance, and somebody will come up who is a friend of mine, and he will be, you know, even the Schwann man is.
Yeah, and for that, you have to be very cautious. We don't want a bite to occur, right? This is the last thing you want to have happen. So when you prevent, you manage and you prevent, don't get in situations where, you know, keep him in the house. Don't
keep
get
him on a leash.
Sometimes the leash isn't even, you know, the last thing to do is put him on a tie out outside. That would be the bite waiting to happen, right?
But if you're playing with him outside.
But say if you're outside, you know, the leash is helpful, but the trick with that sometimes, Larry, is that people think a leash, like, solves all the problems, and the dog ends up biting somebody because they're worse on a leash. They're more defensive on a leash. So you want to manage it, keep them inside when you can't do conditioning and training. When you can do conditioning and training, you set it up, you have your friends help, you basically follow the Cautious Canine program. I don't have enough time on this show to describe it. Basically, you're going to do the same thing you're going to do walking down the stairs, is you're going to have him learn that when he sees an unfamiliar person who's going to stand at first like 15 feet away and throw pieces of bacon or whatever, and then turn and walk away. You're not going to have him come closer. You're not going to teach them to let somebody get all the way close to them and take food out of their hand and then go, oh no, how did I get so close to this person? So look up the Cautious Canine. There's also a program called Behavior Adjustment Training, BAT, B-A-T. You can look that up. It's another method that can be used to turn this around. This probably can be turned around, but you might need a coach to help you do it.
And good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Patricia McConnell, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about your pet's behavior, I hope you'll join in as we visit with Patricia McConnell today. Larry Mueller here. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page as well at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo or post a question there as well. David in South Milwaukee up next with a question. So, David, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, folks. I love dogs. I've had three of them in my life. However, when I'm out exercising early in the morning and strange dogs are outside, I don't love them so much when they chase me.
Oh, I got it. I'm with you.
And there's two types. There's one type where the owner's lazy and they just let the dog out without a leash.
Mm-hmm.
And usually what I'll do when they chase me is I'll stop, I'll freeze, I'll turn into a mannequin and avoid eye contact. And then oftentimes they'll stop and sniff me and the owner will come and, you know, take care of me.
All very smart.
The other thing is stray dogs, and I'm awfully afraid of those. And I'm wondering if there's something maybe I could spray on my pants or something, you know, like the caprylic, that stuff, pepper spray or something, and where they're going to say, I'm not interested in this guy, and just go away.
Yeah, I have a good idea for you that's worked really, really well, and it seems so low-tech.
That's what I love.
Yeah, it's so simple. And I actually have a video on my blog, as a matter of fact, of showing how it stops dogs.
Oh.
So is it going to stop every dog? No, of course not. But basically what you do, David, is you get a big handful. It's in your pocket while you're running or have a little waste bag or something. I want you to have a handful of dog treats. And the cheapest way to do it is get some dog kibble and then mix a couple of really stinky, smelly, wonderful things in it, sort of mix it around so all the kibble smells like fresh liver or something. So you just keep them in the freezer, and what you're going to do is as the dog is running up to you, you're going to reach into your pocket, you're going to get a big, huge handful, and you're going to throw them directly at the dog's face so they literally hit the dog in the face. And then they scatter and fall on the ground around the dog. And unless a dog is absolutely dedicated and on a dead run with the purpose of biting you, it stops most of the dogs. Again, not all, but it stops most dogs. They feel it on their face. They're like, what was that? And then for one millisecond, they're like, oh, wait, I smell something. And then they spend 5 minutes looking for the last piece because you threw 35 of them. And they've eaten 34, but they know there's one more. And meanwhile, you're 200, 300, 400 yards away.
Mm. Very good. What kind of stinky things do you recommend?
I would, the really easy things to do, you can, if you're into it, you could, like, buy some liver and cook it up, microwave it some and mix it up with kibble. You can just go to a pet food store and buy some of the soft commercial treats, cut them up in little pieces. That works great, too.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. And so you've got a video of this.
I do. It's actually used for people who have, originally I use it for people who have dogs who are dog reactive. So, people who have dogs like that, we've all heard somebody down the block whose huge two dogs are running at you at a dead run.
Right.
And a block away, someone says, "It's okay, they're fine." And you're like, "But it's not."
No, it's not.
So you just throw this handful of treats at the dog. And they stop and eat the treats.
Roberta in West Madison, on to you now. Hi, Roberta.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Maybe I've called the wrong number and I should be calling that professor in Whitewater.
Yeah. This is about urination, I guess.
Yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, it's a timely topic for me. We have two dogs.
Okay.
We have a nearly 14-year-old Cavalier.
Aw.
And his brother, who came from a different litter, who is 7.
Okay.
And since we got the younger, we call him the puppy, since we got him at about 5 years old, I realized that he was urinating in different places in the house, usually on, like, the bedpost or the skirt of another bed.
Oh, dear.
That's not good.
No. And he's been checked out. He's had, been to the vet numerous times.
Okay.
And there doesn't seem to be anything physically wrong. Well, I happened to be at Walgreens, and I said to my husband, they had these little $10 beds, doggy beds, that were just the right size for him. So I bought a bunch of them, and I scattered them around the different places where he'd been doing this. And by golly, he started going to those little beds. I mean, not going in them, but
started
going
marking
to
them.
Instead of marking him, he would sleep in them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we thought, we have solved our problem. And it's been really, wonderful. Except yesterday.
Oh, shoot.
I realized, as I looked over at the patio door, and I happened to have the curtain drawn and the sun was coming in, and I realized that he had urinated all along the bottom of that ceiling door.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm wondering, why do you think he's doing this?
Well, and what's more important is how do we stop it, right?
Right.
It sounds like you think this has been going on a long time. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently
okay.
So, because, we only noticed it at 5 years old, and maybe he was doing it before that. And the two dogs seem to get along very well.
Yeah.
Except the younger thinks he's the alpha.
Yeah.
And the older is patient and
got it.
Yeah.
But he's older and he was there first. And, we don't really know. A lot of people want to bring in dominance theory as a reason this could be going on. And, we just don't know. But it could have something to do with sort of a kind of an insecurity, a Napoleon complex. I want to be in control of things and yet, and I'm sort of the guy on the move, but I'm the young one, I wasn't here as long, and, the other one may be old and passive and sweet, but he's a resident. So it could have something to do with social insecurity. Uh-huh. It could also just have to do with the fact that he's got in a bad habit. He needed to pee.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so he went, it's like he didn't get out, he needed to pee, and he discovered that, nothing happened.
Well,
you know?
when he was an infant, I didn't go outside with him like I did the older one.
Yeah.
I went out with the older one when he was a puppy and praised him and said, "Oh, great, good dog." Well, I sent him out with the older one. I let the older brother.
That's probably part of the problem. It's so important to go out with them and give them a treat right after they go. This little rescue dog I got, 7 years old, lived in a cage for 7 years, right?
Oh, man.
And so I literally took her out every 10 minutes for, forever.
Yeah.
Seemed like forever. But here's what I suggest you do. First of all, you're going to need to manage this by doing everything you can to get rid of the scent of urine. Which is not easy because dogs' noses are a lot better than ours, right? So you can get a black light and that urine will show up, and you need to treat it chemically with some kind of commercial enzyme, because basically scent to a dogs decide where to go based on scent. We decide based on vision. You know, where's the sign that says girls' room? Where's the white round thing? You know, they decide based on scent. So you got to get rid of that. Then you're going to have to treat him like a puppy. You know, you need to go back to watching him like a hawk, keeping him. You might even want to leash him to you for a while. Take him outside. And often, don't wait for him to tell you. That's a huge mistake a lot of people make. Don't wait for them to tell you. I think a lot of times people are telling us, and they're like, oh, did you want to be petted? And then we pet them, and they're like, well,
no,
petting's nice, but, you know, I really needed to pee. So take him out like he was a puppy. Take him out often. Give him a great food treat right after he urinates. Don't stand at the door and let him trot back to you and then get a treat. That's getting a treat for trotting back to you, right? Go outside, stand right beside him as he pees, give him a treat for that, and then gradually start giving him more and more freedom. So given that when you put these little dog beds down to where he was going and he quit, that's really, really good. It sounds like you're on your way, but you just have to complete the process.
Good luck. Thank you very much. For calling. Appreciate it, Roberta. I want to give Beth in Milwaukee a chance to get involved here. Beth, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We rescued a dog from Tennessee in April, and we have three children, and they're now 10, 9, and 7. It's girl, boy, girl, and the girl is no problem. The oldest girl is no problem. The 9-year-old boy, he's just a boy, and he treats the dog like his twin brother, and he's just very, you know, wrestling with him and everything. And our dog is very submissive to our boy, when in fact the boy probably is the most aggressive with the dog. And
okay.
Frequently I have to say, you know, Antonio, don't do that, you know,
yeah.
No, don't do that.
Yeah.
But the dog is really submissive to our son. And then we have a sweet, sweet, sweet 7-year-old girl who is the sweetest girl in the whole world. But Toby seems to be dominant towards her.
What does he do? What does he do to
her? And it's not that often, but it happens enough. And you know, she'll just come up to him, you know, and be by his face, and she'll just want to pet him and talk to him, and he'll growl.
Yeah.
And she'll back off, and he's never bit her, nipped at her, but it's kind of a threatening situation.
Yeah, I can see the whole, you know, this whole thing playing out, and I'm really glad you called, because I'm afraid there is going to be a bite. And we don't want that to happen, obviously, for a million reasons. So here's what, obviously, I don't know exactly what's going on after hearing for, what, 60 seconds or something? So, again, a behaviorist, a really great progressive trainer would be a great person to get in, but here's what I can tell you right now, is this kind of situation is really common. If you have your middle son is basically, you know, like you said, being a boy, and, you know, parenthetically, other ways to say that are semi-harassing the dog, right?
Right.
You know, and we all know that kids need to learn how to treat dogs. So you said the dog is super submissive of him, probably a little afraid of him. So the dog inhibits his responses around your boy. But then when your sweet, young, less assertive young girl does something the dog doesn't like, there isn't that for fearful inhibition. So the dog feels freer to be like, I am sick of being harassed, get out of my face. You know? So the trick is going to be for the whole family. So we need to work on your boy learning more appropriate ways to deal with the dog. And so one thing I would do is I would take all that energy and get it turned around the right way. This is one of the tricks to working with kids and dogs is, you know, your 9-year-old boy is like full of energy, right? Start teaching him to be a really great dog trainer. You know, start teaching him to teach the dog tricks. Use food, use positive reinforcement. There's some great books out there, by the way, about kids and dogs that I highly recommend you get. I can't even tell you the titles, but I can tell you the authors, so you can find them either on Amazon or at DogWise, which is the Amazon of dog books. Colleen Pillar, P-L-A-R, has a great book on kids and dogs. And Pia Silvani, S-I-L-V-A-N-I, has a great book on kids and dogs. They both have co-authors, but those are wonderful books. So we need to redirect your son's energy. And then also you say, for example, when your daughter gets in your dog's sort of, you know, leaning forward. I mean, a lot of us put our faces right by our dog's faces, and we, because that's how we want to express affection. But actually, a lot of times dogs don't like that.
Right. They hate. And I'm working on her behavior too.
Yeah, that's good.
Not to do that, but
yeah, and you've got a lot of working to do, mom. You know, poor mom. I mean, here she's got three animals. She's trying to retrain all at the same time.
Right.
So, you know, so one, you can work on conditioning the dog. So you know, it's actually sort of fun to have somebody get her face right in his face, you know, so the dog gets a treat for that. You want to manage and prevent as much as you can. Say you see something about to happen and you're like, good boy, dog, you know, good boy, you're okay. You want to condition him. When you say good boy, you give him a treat. You want to manage it, prevent it. But basically, the best thing to do is to take your children's energy and redirect it and teach them appropriate ways to interact with your dog.
Yeah. Okay.
And there'll be specifics in those books I mentioned. That's not enough to really help you, but it's enough to get you started, okay?
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And it works with other kind of training of your kids, too. Not necessarily just with dogs.
Sort of universal principles. There's a lot of universality to behavior, isn't
there? Oh, man, there sure is. Patricia McConnell, our guest today, she's going to be with us right up until 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Have you ever watched a pet do something really kind of unexpected and you looked and said, shook your head, wondered what in the world is going through their mind? Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest is certified applied animal behaviorist and dog trainer, author Patricia McConnell. And she's with us until 12:30 today and wants to hear about what your pet is up to and what has you perplexed about your pet. What has Fido or Fluffy or been doing that you can't figure out? She's happy to help out when you call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. You can also leave a question, a comment, or a photo on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And if you like the page while you're there, we'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Taking a look at animal behavior and your pet's behavior today with our guest, Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, dog trainer extraordinaire, author extraordinaire. Her latest book, Love Has No Age Limit, Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your Home. And you can go to her website, which we have a link to at our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can find out about that book and a whole lot more. How many books do you have out now?
I'm losing count. I think 14.
14.
Is it 15? 14 or 15.
14 or 15.
Yeah.
But they're all up on your page.
Yeah. And there was something I wanted to actually let your listeners know about.
Yes.
If I could. Mm-hmm. I'm on a committee that was charged by the chancellor to create a community discussion about using animals in research, as happens often here at the University of Wisconsin. And we are bringing in Franz DeWall, who is an internationally known primatologist, author. He actually was here at UW-Madison for many years, and we lost him to Yerkes, darn it. Mm-hmm. He's an incredible resource. But he's going to be giving a talk on empathy in animals on Friday, February 3rd, at the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery, 7 p.m., So 7 p.m., Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. Franz Stoll is going to talk about empathy in animals and his research and research in that area in general. And then there will be a discussion among basically everyone there, anybody who wants to, about the implications of that in relation to using animals in biomedical research. So it's an important topic. And I'm really excited to have Franz coming here. It's actually the third in a series we've had. We will have four talks over the period of the year. So, yeah, so I hope people can come out. It'll be a great talk by Franz. He's a phenomenal speaker. Got great research and a very interesting discussion, I think.
And the date again for that is?
It's Friday, February 3rd. Again, at the Wisconsin Institutes of Discovery, that great new, amazing building.
On the UW-Madison campus.
On UW-Madison campus with a great restaurant, by the way. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Love that restaurant. You know, we have lots of Facebook comments and photos, some great kitty photos. And here's a comment from Rich regarding your earlier suggestion, Patricia, about throwing treats into a dog's face. Could you please explain how it's a good thing to reward a dog for chasing you? Seems to me that you're training them to get a great reward for bad behavior.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for asking, Rich. It's a great question and a very understandable one, and here's the answer. You're not rewarding them from bad behavior, because look at what happens. The dog is chasing you, you turn around, you throw a bunch of treats in their face, and they stop, right?
Yeah.
So you're stopping the chasing. They've stopped, and then they put their heads down, and then they start to eat. So what happens is they get rewarded for stopping. So what happens over time is dogs, if you sort of go the same route and the same dog knows you, the dog will run out, stop 10 feet away from you, and like, okay, where are the treats?
Mm-hmm.
So rather than teaching them to chase you aggressively, they may run out to see you, but they're not going to be aggressive, and they're not going to chase you. It's a great question, though.
And Valerie wonders if you have any suggestions, this is also on our Facebook page, for training a six-month-old golden retriever to detect low blood sugars in a child with type 1 diabetes.
Wow, that is a very interesting question. I know there are dogs who do that. I don't know how easy it is to train them. I know there's a discussion about are those kind of dogs born rather than made. There are associations that work on that kind of a service dog. I've never helped work on that issue before, so I'm not the person exactly to ask. I would Google it, basically, because there are dogs out there who do that. There are service dogs who help people with seizure disorders. There are service dogs who help people with narcolepsy. There are service dogs who help people with OCD and PTSD, you know, a remarkable set of things. There's a Psychiatric Service Dog Association, You might want to Google them and check that out and see if that helps you. But so somewhere out there, you can find other people who have dogs like that. But I don't know how much of it is actually easily trained versus a kind of a dog who just picks it up him or herself.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Carol also has sent a photo of Ozzy, cat who was adopted. He has vampire face.
He has a little tooth issue. There are some little teeth sticking out of the mouth. Pretty cute.
Oh, man. And Janice wondered if you'd recommend some Milwaukee or City or North Shore area dog obedience classes.
Yeah, you know, I'm not doing classes anymore.
Right.
I sold Dog's Best Friend to Amy Moore, former training director, now owner for many, many years. I know she opened up classes on the west side of Milwaukee. So I would check out. There's a little confusion. There are two Dog's Best Friends in Milwaukee. So be sure to check out the Dog's Best Friend that is based here in Madison, Wisconsin. So that's my best help for you. And another idea, I know it's time consuming, but a great thing to do is to go to the class. And what you want to see is a high student to dog or instructor to dog ratio.
Yep.
And you want to see people who are using positive reinforcement. You don't want to see people using choke collars or prong collars on puppies. I've actually seen people put prong collars on 8-week-old puppies. So you don't want to go there.
Okay. Well, Deanne in Milwaukee County has a question for you. Hi, Deanne.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. Hi. I have a cat. He's 3 years old, and he constantly wants to sneak outside.
Oh, yeah.
He cries and cries and cries by the door. We have two other cats. They want nothing to do with it. But he'll cry and cry and cry by the door. So we actually bought him a collar and a leash, and we'll put his collar on and take him for a walk
good
outside.
For you.
All the
good.
Neighbors laugh, you know. We're
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a problem. It doesn't matter the weather either. It doesn't matter if it's snowing or raining or anything. He'll sneak out. If you're not looking at that door, he's gone. Is there any way of detouring? I'm afraid he's going to get out.
Yeah, and get hurt.
and get out. Yes, because we have coyotes in our area.
Yeah, it's dangerous out there. And, you know, people, I just have to make a note, because I have a cat who is exactly like that. I got her from the Dane County Shelter. The idea was she would be a house cat. I spent a year trying to train her to be to be happy in the house, and it wasn't possible. And so people who haven't had a cat like this, they don't believe us. They're like, no, 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 cats are fine inside. It's like, yeah, well, two of them are, in your case, and one of them isn't. And, you know, every cat is different, and there is a subset population of cats who basically is like, either go outside or, you know, I'll never stop trying. So here are a couple of things you can do. One is, and none of them are easy, one is to try and logistically create a safe way for your cat to be outside. So maybe in spring you build a little cat porch. You know, you build an area where the cat can go, maybe put in a little cat door, although be careful because sometimes things come in. Larry and I are used to that from calling all pets here about, like, I put in a dog door and now there's squirrels in my living room.
We're planning on doing that.
Oh, good for
so
you.
So that he could have a safe
cat. Yeah, good. Oh, are you sweet? It's not a simple thing to do, right? So good for you for that. Here's something that is, I'll tell you, it's positive punishment that I did use on one client. They had a cat. They lived in the city. Cat was determined to get outdoors. They went through your legs, and the cat was going to die. So we did use, quote, positive punishment in that sense, in that we added something to stop a behavior. So basically what we did is, first of all, you need to get some kind of ear protection, and I'm really serious about this. I actually hurt my own hearing by not taking that advice the first time I did this. I stood outside the door. And it was easy in this case. I could sort of hide in a bush. I had two pot lids. And I'm very fast. So I have to, or I was anyway then. So you have to have somebody who's got very fast reflexes. You're going to open the door. And as the cat is just, and you got to be really quick, right at the entry, you bang the two pot lids together.
And scare him back
and
inside.
Scare him back. Or you can get one of those boat horns.
Yeah, those things are loud.
They're very loud. So I'm serious about the ear protection.
Yeah.
But for the person who's like standing right next to it. But that's often successful. But I say often. I shouldn't say that. I take that back. Let me highlight and delete the often word out of that narrative, because I haven't done it that much. I've probably done it 5 times, and every time it was successful, although in a few cases it wore off after, you know, 6 months or so. So you'd want to do it at each door. You'd want to do it possibly twice, and hopefully that would do it for you. And then, you know, by spring you can get your cat backyard. Yeah. Aren't you sweet? What a sweetie you are.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Judy and Marinette, on to you. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Patricia and Larry. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have right now he's a 9-year-old shepherd, and we've had him since he was a puppy. We both walked him throughout these years, and now all of a sudden, within the last couple months, he will not walk with my husband. He might get to the end of the driveway, and then Gunner will sit down and not move and look back at the house. And my husband tries to nudge him, and he kind of like, no, I'm not going that way. But as soon as he starts walking toward the house, boom, he's up and running.
Now, will he go on that walk with anybody else?
He walks, well, I walk him, but we're the only two in the house, so.
But he walks with you fine? He'll go with you?
Yes. Oh, yes. I guess you can say he's mainly my dog.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if he has that much of an attachment to me, because back in 2010 I had I was in the hospital for a week or whatever, and when I came home, it was like he didn't want to leave my side.
You know,
he followed me everywhere.
Okay. So you know, this is a mystery we may never solve. Mm-hmm. Here are a couple of potentials of why. One, obviously, he's super bonded to you. So
doesn't want to leave you.
He doesn't want to leave you. And he's not as bonded to your husband. What's most likely, frankly, is that something negative happened, not necessarily related to your husband at all, but your dog might make that relationship. He might make that association. This happens a lot. You know, something bad happens and we make the wrong association. You know, you get hit by a blue car, then you're afraid of the color blue. You know, it's really cars that are problem. So it's possible something happened when he was out walking with your husband that scared him, and he's not fairly associates it with your husband, or he's not enjoying walks anymore, and he doesn't really want to go, but he doesn't want to leave you. So I would look at health first of all. You know, always look at health. You know, does it hurt him to walk? A lot of shepherds have a lot of hip trouble and a lot of joint trouble and a lot of arthritis and pain. And so make sure that's not the issue. Get a good check by a good veterinarian. And be basically Sherlock Holmes here. Start thinking about, well, what are all the possible reasons that could be stopping him from doing it? You might want to take him in a car and take him on a walk somewhere else and see if he's happy to walk around there.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So just think very sort of out of the box and think experimentally. So what could be going on here? If he doesn't need the walk, you know, I don't know how often you walk versus your husband, but he doesn't have to walk with your husband, then I would cut that out for a while. Maybe have your husband take him out partway. And then give him a treat while he's still walking forward, and then go back inside the house. Sort of see if you can finesse the boundary issue that way. But I think you have some detective work to do here. This is a fun case. I wish I could have
good
more
luck.
Time on this one.
Good luck. Oh, thanks for calling, too. Renee in Chippewa Falls, how can we help you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm so excited to get on here. We have a 7-month-old Goldador, and she will not leave our cats alone. One cat is almost 17 years old, and he gets so upset. We had him to the vet the other day, and I said, I'm afraid he's going to have a heart attack. And she said, you know, he could.
Yeah, he's really stressed.
He's a gray, and he gets like a long gray tube. He looks like a long gray tube, and he spits and growls. And he hasn't been in the kitchen since we've gotten the dog, you know. And so the other cat is more tolerant, and but she thinks, you know, Pearl thinks she's playing with these cats. And how do I, you know, the training pretty much has come along with other areas, but this area is just...
This could be a really tricky one. I am sympathetic because my Border Collie Willie sees my cat as a small hoofed animal.
Yeah.
And so this is something I, too, have worked on very, very hard. I can tell you that it's 94% managed. I would never say it's all gone.
Well, he's gone to peeing on things because he can't get to his litter box.
This is really. I mean, you're going to lose your cat. This is really critical. Yeah. So the first thing I do is I would put your Golden on a leash.
She's gated. We keep her gated into the kitchen a lot of the time.
Okay, but when you're home, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the gates are open, I want you to have her on a leash.
Okay.
Because what I want you to do is every time she looks at your cat, I want you to teach her, first ask her. First she looks at the cat, and either cat, and I want you to go, and when she turns and looks at you, you're going to give her a treat.
Okay.
So basically what you're wanting to do, your goal is for her to look automatically. You do this so often and so repetitively that every time she looks at the cat, she expects a treat from you. So she looks at the cat, she automatically looks at you. So every time she sees the cat, she looks at you.
Okay.
All right? And I want her to learn to sit and stay while the cats walk by.
That would be great.
Yeah, and you could do this. You know, she's young, and so you're going to need some time. That's part of why I recommend the leash, is because she can't control herself. You can't control her verbally yet. She's too young. So take all this obedience training that you've gotten started, and now's the time to start applying it. But again, she's not capable of doing what you want yet at this young age.
Okay.
So you need to protect your older cat from her by management and training. And I would expect maybe it's going to take a year for her to be as good as you'd like her to be.
Long time.
Meanwhile, lots of other play. A tired Golden is a happy Golden. Lots of other play to tire her out.
Thanks, Renee. Heidi, in the Denver, Colorado.
Hey.
Well, Hello. I just want to say I am still a WPR supporter because it is awesome. So I'm so glad to be able to call in today. But Patricia, I have a question for you. I've been using your book for separation anxiety with my dog, who I've had almost 2 years. We are finally to the point where I can leave her home for about 5 hours alone without her freaking
good,
out.
Good, good. That's huge.
It's been 2 long years, but one problem I still have, and I'm hoping you can help me with, she still pees every time I leave, whether it's a half an hour, 5 hours, usually not 15 minutes, but she pees, and it's not the same place. It's all over the place. It's a very nervous pee.
Okay.
So I'm just wondering, I've tried to train her to use an indoor litter box. So I've bought like a piece of sod, put it in like a little container and tried to train her to use that. I've tried the bark where she pees on, you know, I've tried taking her own scent and I can't find any books or resources to teach an adult dog how to pee in an indoor litter box.
Gotcha. And you know, I'm not a big fan.
There may be a reason there's
yeah. And there are litter boxes. If you Google, there are litter boxes for dogs. You can get them out there. I actually helped my mom when she moved into a senior facility with an upstairs apartment. We constructed this huge, huge litter box for her dogs. But here's why I'm not a fan, is because once you teach them to go in the house, they're like, okay, I can go in the house. And your dog's already going in the house, so it's going to be really hard to teach her to just go in the spot. You might as well take all that time and energy and try and deal with the problem. So it sounds like... It sounds like, you know, she's not barking or chewing, but she's urinating when you leave, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and she urinates when I have, like, the washer going. It's a very, it's a fearful nervousness. Or if I'm vacuuming.
Oh, wow. So she's got a lot of fear issues, doesn't she?
She does,
Poor kid. Yeah. You know, this might be, since it sounds like a kind of a generalized anxiety and a lot of fearful issues, there are a couple of things. I'll tell you what I'd do if this was my dog. I would, first of all, because I'm a big advocate of combining Western medicine with adjunctive holistic therapy, you might want to talk to both perspectives. Talk to a Western medicine veterinarian about some kind of anxiety relieving medication. Be sure it's not.
Which she is on.
Okay. But it's not working.
What's she on?
Well, this is her third medication. She was on Paxil, paroxetine, then she was on Clomicalm, and now she's on amitriptyline, which seems to be the best.
Which seems to be working the best. Okay.
Yeah.
There are, you might want to talk to a veterinary behaviorist because it's actually possible. In some cases, again, this is veterinary medicine. It's not my field. But in some cases, you can combine two different, very different types of drugs. Obviously, you always need to be very careful about combining drugs. But you might want to have your vet call a veterinary behaviorist and do a consult. But you also might want to look at holistic medicine and adjunctive medicine. I don't know. Have you tried dog-appeasing pheromone, DAP?
Yes, I've tried that. Yeah. I've tried calming herbs like valerian.
Oh, you've done so much. You're such a great person. Have you tried
a rescue remedy?
What a sweetheart. Have you tried a thunder wrap or an anxiety wrap?
I have not yet tried.
You might want to try a thunder shirt. I've had that work. It's sort of like... It's like a tight little sweater for your dog that seems to relieve anxieties in some dogs.
So
that's a possibility. You might want to look at her diet. I know Chinese medicine is very big on different diet, and I could tell you I have a very sensitive, half-crazy border collie. I've only fed him certain types of protein, and he was doing so well, and I got lazy, and I had chicken and lamb all over the house, so I gave him chicken and lamb, and all of a sudden he was terrified of men. Now, I did several different things besides changing his diet, but you know what? He's all fine again, and I don't know if it's diet-related, but that is something Western medicine puts no credibility into that, but you might want to think about it.
But I've tried everything else.
You might want to think about it. Yeah, what a sweetheart. What a lucky dog you have.
She is the luckiest dog. Well, thank you for your input. I appreciate it.
Oh, Heidi, thank you so much for calling and listening all the way from Colorado. That's great. We have, it's so little time left. And I want to go back to and so many questions here. We'll never get to get to them, but... Let's go back to your website and your blog again to talk about that for just a minute.
Yeah, thanks. The website, just go to my name, patriciamcconnell.com. And lots of fun stuff on there, books, events, talks, There's a whole training tip section. The blog, The Other End of the Leash, is an inquiry into behavior, relationship with dogs, us, them, you know, comparative psychology, biology, books, recipes, pictures, etc. So lots going on. We're actually working on a new website right
now.
Oh,
are you?
Quite excited. It's going to be a while till it launches, as they say. But yeah, that's going on. And then there's this talk on February 3rd at the Wisconsin Institute of Discovery, Franz DeWall, amazing speaker, primatologist, talking about empathy in animals. And later there'll be a discussion about the implications of that on using animals in research.
Well,
interesting,
so lots
stuff
going on. And you'll come back and be with us?
No,
again?
I'm never coming back, Larry. That's it. I'm walking out the door, Mueller. I'm never coming back.
Oh, I bet she comes back.
I'll bet she does.
Patricia McConnell will be back, and we will do this again with her. It was great fun, as it always is. Tomorrow at 11, we'll talk with Georgia Pellegrini, who is the author of Girl Hunter, Revolutionizing the Way We Eat, One Hunt at a Time. And then Chad McGrath comes by to talk about cross-country skiing. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.